Welcome to the Ether. Today is Thursday, December 30th, 2021. This is 2022 with Sand Clock. Let's take a listen.
The individuals behind the masses, if that makes sense. So I asked one of our top token holders to kind of come on and just talk with us a bit about what he's most excited about with regards to Sand Clock and kind of what he's looking forward to, and have, you know, join in on the conversation. So John Stern, I just invited you to speak. I don't know if you have to accept it or if you have to then request, but I just invited one of you guys who, you know, he's a community member, but he's also kind of become a friend. So there you want our John Stern. I see you. John, if you want to introduce yourself really quickly, and then we'll kind of jump into it.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, perfect. I guess like a brief introduction is that I really am just a community member who found Sand Clock around the actual sales pitch video, and then started looking in from there. And then after looking in and being around the community and talking to the team and some other people who are in now, just very, very excited about the project.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you, John Stern. And I don't know if I should call you John Stern, but I just always call you that because that is like your handle on Discord. So it just, I don't know. I do that a lot. I'll just call people by their handle on Discord. But yeah, you know, something that like, I don't know if people realize much about Sand Clock is how much the community has kind of influenced the evolution of the project. Like Q and Alex, for example, were both community members. When they first joined the team, Q was like basically just started getting really involved and had a lot of great ideas and was progressing the project a lot, very significantly. So we were like, do you want to come on and just be on the team? Because you basically are acting like you're on the team right now anyway with how much you're adding and contributing. So, and then Alex was something similar. We were looking for legal counsel. We interviewed tons and tons and tons of people. Like really, we had so many interviews, dozens of interviews. And Alex was somebody who wasn't referred to us. He was just someone who saw the call to action and was interested, and he liked the project, and he had all the experience we were looking for and all of the background, and also fit really well with our team. So he came on board. So when I talk to you guys, like, I really do enjoy getting to know you. And John Stern was similar in that I just started talking to him because he was a really active community member and very involved and very valuable in my opinion, in the Discord in particular and on Twitter as well. And then I started talking to him, and turns out like he's actually a really, really nice person and also very intelligent and has a lot of great ideas. So that's kind of why I said, you know, if you want to come on here and talk about everything with us. So with that, John, would you like to kind of talk about what you're most excited about with regards to Sand Clock?
Yeah, the thing that really interests me the most about Sand Clock is the way that you guys approach things and how you want to make everything easier for everybody else and really simplify getting yield on different chains, helping developers integrate Sand Clock vertically onto their own protocols, so that you're giving them the turnkey contracts and all they have to do is go in, change a few things, and then set it up and it'll run. And then also one of the biggest problems that I personally have, and I know a lot of others have, is spending the yield that they actually earn and being able to take it from crypto to real life to be able to buy things like groceries, pay bills, and how you guys are setting it up so that it is like a seamless transition from you have your principal in the vaults, you can redirect it to the card without having to think about it, and it happens on a perpetual basis so that once you set it up the first time, it's good to go, and then you just have the card and you can go and spend it. Just the whole idea of simplifying everything down to make it very easy when it seems like a lot of people in crypto are trying to make things almost more complex than necessary. Like by doing it and making it simple, it will onboard more people over the long term, because no one's going to come to crypto if it's more difficult than what they're doing in their everyday life. It needs to be easier to onboard the rest of the people who aren't tech savvy, like the early adopters are. And I just think you guys' whole mindset of aiming for the non-tech savvy people is the way to go.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and that is definitely something that we strive to do, specifically the front end. And it is one thing that I love about our architecture is that even though our front end will only support a couple of different uses, like dollar cost averaging, I guess separate strategies as well, we could include that in the front end, and sending the yield just to different wallets or donations. The architecture itself allows for so much more, and so we will use it to its fullest extent, just perhaps not through our front end, because that would just introduce way too much complexity and just make the product an illy would be a term for it, I guess, but just not pleasant to use. And you'll just be able to spin off so many different projects using our vaults. And that is actually one of the reasons why we included the grants program into our tokenomics, so that people can build using our vaults and be rewarded for it proportionately to how much value they're adding to the treasury.
Yeah, and I think that just because the front end is simple doesn't mean that the protocol itself is simple. You mentioned beforehand that when you first started this, like, you didn't necessarily understand how difficult something just as splitting yield from the principal on the in the farm, how difficult that would actually be. But by you guys shifting that to the back end, to where people don't even have to think about it, and it just, like, it relieves a whole, like, the whole thought process that people would typically take when thinking about how they want to split up their yield, or having to do it in multiple transactions instead of just doing it in one go. Like, that is massive in my eyes.
Yeah, and exactly. And another thing is that people have asked, why shouldn't I just do it myself? Like, what's stopping people from just doing dollar cost averaging into Ethereum with their yield? Well, then you're not benefiting from the pool transactions. You're going to pay $100 worth of gas just so that you can buy $100 worth of ETH or Luna or Bitcoin, and it's not really feasible. And with Sandclock, you don't really have to pay extra gas fees, and you're benefiting from automation. So even though you're paying a performance fee on your yield, we don't have management fees. For instance, Yearn has a 2% flat fee, which can get pricey depending on the yield generated. But yeah, it's definitely something that is necessary, specifically because of how expensive it is now to do anything on mainnet. And it is something that people don't know they need, but they do if they want to do anything with their money.
Yeah, a perfect example of people asking why would I automate it when I could just do it myself is, this was a few days ago, another project that I really like. I was looking at the chart and I bought it, let's just say, for example, at $100, and I watched it go to 60 over the course of a few days. Wasn't worried, had fully planned on DCAing down and increasing my holdings in that project, and then just ultimately forgot about it. But if it had been, and now it's at over $200. So if it had been automated, I would have never had to worry about it. I would have gotten the good entry at the lower points for a project that I really like and plan on holding for a longer amount of time. But just simple human nature, I forgot about it and missed out on a potential 400% gain just because I got busy with whatever else it was.
Yeah, I think reducing cognitive load is one of the most underrated aspects of automation. People don't realize how preoccupied they are thinking about stuff that shouldn't even be on your mind. You shouldn't have to worry about, well, stuff like that that you've already decided. It should just be done without your input. And being able to just offload this responsibility to software is a massive privilege that we as 21st century, humans benefit from that our ancestors weren't able to. And it just frees up your brain to focus on other things like sourcing more opportunities, or even more mundane things like just going for a walk and doing activities with our family.
Yeah, I agree. And it's kind of short-sighted to say, like, when people say, why wouldn't I just do this myself? Is most people that aren't in crypto now, when they join crypto, they don't want to put in the amount of time that, say, someone like myself or you guys put into a project like this. They want to do something simple and easy and that they can just do once and not have to think about it, and they'll just go on and they'll be able to make money in the background through the vaults of SandClock. They'll be able to pay bills with it, and just they just want it to be easy. They don't want to have to worry about bridging from Ethereum to Terra and then to a layer two to get the yield that they want, and then have to bridge it back and then send it to their wallet and do all this other stuff. And we already automate so many different things that we don't even realize that we're automating. It's just more and more things are going to get automated as we move forward. So people aren't going to want to deal with the nitty gritty of different things like that.
I think that's such a good point. Like, because to probably most of the people listening right now, we're really into crypto and like we're really into how it works and the next big thing and studying it and researching it and analyzing graphs. But to the average person, to the masses of people, they're not probably that into crypto and how it works and everything that happens behind the scenes. And they're, in order to get them into it and to get them using it and using it to their advantage, it's probably not going to happen, at least not soon, if there's that huge barrier to entry, that huge learning curve, and they have to do everything themselves and study it themselves and research it and try to understand it themselves. But if you simplify things and you basically do it for them, then that is much more attractive to the masses than having to, I mean, like, I know a lot of people who you know, family and friends, and I'm sure we all do, who just view crypto as inaccessible to them, like because they either don't have the time or the interest and motivation to learn how it works in order to be successful and use it to their advantage. So they just don't really pay attention to it. But if there was a project like Sandclock that kind of opens that door to being, you know, to accessibility and ease of use and a superior user interface and user experience and all of that, like I think that that is a really smart path toward getting more people involved who might just not really have the interest to learn how it works. They're not excited about crypto in the way that most of the people listening right now probably are. And also with that, John Stern has seen the UX, and he was one of our very, very early UX testers. We've had only a few people test it thus far, and then we'll have kind of a bigger group of people do it probably next week. But John, if you want to talk a little bit about kind of your impression of the UX and how you felt about it, and, you know, of course it's not done. I mean, it is done, but there are adjustments that we'll make based on the feedback we gather.
Oh yeah, we made quite a few adjustments, right? Based on that.
Exactly. But from what you did see and you know, how was it for you? What did you think of it?
Yeah, I was going to say something about it, but I didn't know. I didn't want to get in trouble with your legal advisor for what I was saying.
No, it's okay. I give you permission. Alex gives you permission.
I really liked it. I think it's first of all, the design of it is very appealing visually. It's not like overly complex. Like it's a very simple like guide to how to set everything up. It's very intuitive in the way that you can easily figure out what everything on the interface means, how to use it, and honestly the flexibility with when it comes to what you can do with the yield and all that other stuff is, I know it's one thing to hear, and this is something that a lot of people in the community early on had a tough time visualizing, but once you get on there and you see how it's laid out and it's very simple and it's easy to follow, I think that'll be really, really big for the project, because it'll just allow everybody to put that concrete image in their head of what right now is very conceptual for most.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. And I'm glad you said that, because I personally felt the same way the first time I saw first iteration of the UX that our designers came up with. Like, I personally imagined that it would make it click for a lot of people, because it's very visual and it's very hands-on and it's very simple. And the concept of Sandclock, you know, as we talked about earlier, like at least in the background, it's very complex. And I think that overwhelms people sometimes and makes it more difficult to grasp initially. But I do think that when you see the UX, it's like instant connection. Like it just makes sense when you see it in action and you're using it and you're you know, depositing and going through the process. In my opinion, I think it'll click for a lot of people kind of what you can do with it and how powerful it is. Yeah, so I love that you said that as well. So I'm just thinking, like, because of time, if anybody has any questions that they want to ask or comments, like this would be a great time to do it. And our team's here to answer. So we're kind of trapped with you guys. We'll answer if you ask. I know like Mitesh had requested to speak earlier. It looks like maybe he's not online anymore, but if there's anybody else who would like to speak, feel free to request and I will grant you permission. No, I'll give it a minute, but maybe we don't have any. And also, of course, afterward, if you want to reach out to us on Twitter. I do see a request. I'm going to give you your approval. Hello, LARP.
LARP.
LARP, what's up? Do you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, really excited about the project and I really resonate with the parts about making it simple for folks and thinking about getting those new crypto users. And my question is, how would you kind of just explain it in a nutshell to a complete novice?
I would probably bring it back to banks, because I think the biggest difficulty we've had stems from the fact that people don't know what a foundation is. And so we even included our definition of a foundation in the UI. So that would be one thing. So it's a fund, much like a bank. It generates yield on your deposits. But much like a foundation, you have a goal. There's an underlying theme or overarching theme. And if, for instance, your goal is to generate wealth, then it's just going to behave very much like a bank, except the APY is going to be orders of magnitude higher. If your goal is to stack up sats or Ethereum, then you can do that. And you can do that while also donating to optimize your taxes. In a nutshell, the examples I would give pertain to the banking system or traditional foundations, but with a much higher rate of return.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, LARP. And it is something that we deal with pretty regularly, in particular when we're talking with charities. That's usually like really when that comes up, charities, and then occasionally with some like real world institutions and people from kind of the real world space. And usually how I will explain it is I'll preface it by, because you know, when you talk to people about this in the real world, like you have to remember they don't have, in general and for the most part, they won't have any knowledge of crypto. So they're really starting from like just not from zero, from the base layer. So usually how I'll kind of introduce it is by explaining that, you know, like Cristiano said, bringing it back to banks, like you put your money in the bank and you get an interest rate, but that interest rate is usually pennies, right? It's so low. It doesn't really, you don't really benefit much from leaving your money in a bank. It doesn't really bring you much, many gains, right? It's kind of just
outpace inflation.
Yeah, just
you can't do anything with your yield because it's just a ridiculously low amount.
So. And then I'll kind of really quickly explain that the reason for that, in a nutshell, of course, is that there are middlemen involved, and you know, all of these kind of very simplistic, because of course it's a somewhat complex explanation, but a very simple explanation of why that is. And then to bring it to crypto, in crypto, because of all of the reasons mentioned, we can generate really high interest rates on your money and make it really worthwhile to leave your money in a vault like Sandbox. And then of course I'll kind of get into the flexibility, because that is perhaps the most exciting part of Sandbox, in my opinion, at least. The fact that you can really do whatever you want with your money, and it really does empower you as the user. And you can split it however you want. You can direct it wherever you want. If you want to give part of it to charity, you can do that. If you want to keep it for yourself and save for your retirement, you can do that. If you want to create a foundation for your child so that they have a future, maybe scholarship fund or something, you can do that. If you want to send it to create a wallet for your mom and send it to her, you can do that. So like, just, you can do whatever you want. And the idea is to empower you to do what you want with your money. So that's kind of usually my more accessible explanation of it. And that seems to resonate, would you say, Chris? Q, you took yourself off mute. What do you have
something? No, I just wanted to add, build upon it, because when I have conversations with my friends, they always ask the same question. Well, where is all this yield coming from? Right? And so what they're forgetting is that when this new frontier, the tremendous innovations that we had in the DeFi ecosystem, people for example, don't borrow for a whole year at 30%, right? They borrow for 5 seconds, for 5 minutes, because they want to execute on an arbitrage opportunity. For lenders and the money market, basically what happens is that, you know, effectively for them, for the entire year, their APY ends up being 20% at 30%. But for the borrower, if they borrow for 5 seconds because they want to go and flip something really quick, you know, 30% is nothing. And also what's also unique is that in this particular ecosystem, there are no middlemen. So if you want to compare it to the legacy institutions, I know, Jeff, you're listening on the call. I'm not going to reveal who you are, a good friend of mine who really understands credit in the legacy world. Just the amount of paperwork and processing and manpower that's needed to lend money. But when you do it within our ecosystem, the crypto ecosystem, the crypto money markets, it's basically you connect your wallet, provide your collateral, everything is done. If there is a drop in the value of the underlying collateral, well, there's the liquidation of your assets. I mean, the whole system is just so efficient. And so when you take all of that stuff, the totality of all of it, these high rates are possible. You know, we have even had conversations with Cristiano. Well, what happens if someone brings in $1 trillion to the Aura money market or to some other money market that SandClock is connected to? So what would be the implications of it? And so for us, and so that's exactly the beauty of, of when people use SandClock is that you don't have to worry about where that yield comes from, because you've got people within the organization that are continuously kept awake at night thinking about what happens, looking at all these fringe examples of what happens when $1 trillion comes in and enters the market. What happens? Where else can we go for yield? Remember, the reason we exist is to generate wealth for users. I mean, that's the reason we exist. And if our reason to exist is to generate wealth for users within the SandClock community, then we really want to make it as simple as possible where you can deploy your funds, choose the strategy that you want. And the rest is, you know, our team's goal and mission to make sure that we tap into, you know, novel innovations, to make sure we, you know, a new money market emerges that, for example, leverages tokenized assets. You know, there is, a push towards building, tokenizing trade invoices, for example, or tokenizing residential real estate loans. These products are coming to the DeFi world. The rates of return are quite high. And so for SandClock team, because our reason to exist is to generate wealth for users, then for us to go and connect to those markets, I think will continue to be a top priority for us. Chris, you want to build upon that?
Chris, did you want to say anything else about that?
I don't think so.
I was just going to mention, if you don't know Q's background, Q is a banker, like professionally, prior to SandClock, and his background is in banking, and so he understands that world very, very, very well, much better than any of us. And he understands how much they understand and what will get them excited, what will scare them off, how they tick in the traditional banking world. So, yet another reason that he brings so much value to the team, because it's a really unique perspective and you don't hear about that often. Like, there aren't that many bankers in the crypto space. I mean, of course it's always growing, I think, but I think generally you hear more of bankers being oppositional to the crypto space, I think for obvious reasons. So it's kind of fun and unique to have Q, who is very, very pro crypto and sees it as the future and also comes from that traditional banking world.
Yeah. I think the only thing that I would say is that It was the question, what would we do? Can we generate yield on $2 billion, $4 billion, $6 billion? What is our limit? And that is the question that made us want to start Aura as well to support SandClock. But I'm not going to say more than that.
Yeah. So,
but it's yeah, it will help us. I actually just said this on Discord, but it helps to essentially not depend on third parties that we like. They might make decisions that we do not approve of. They might be poorly parameterized. There are a bunch of different reasons as to why someone would want to own the entire pipeline, but that is the reason we started thinking of ways to generate yield on our own and create Aura.
Yeah, and with that, thank you, LARP, very much. That was a great question.
Thank you.
And I'm going to give Anna Crypto 108. You are on with us. Hello. You're connecting, but you have permission to speak. Hello, Anna Crypto 108. If you want to say something, if you want to ask a question or a comment, you are a speaker. You can do that. But you're muted if you don't know.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Hey guys. Came here very, very recently and I'm happy to be here and happy to feel so plugged in to what you're doing and being able to ask you personally a question means a lot. I'm pretty new to crypto, have been kind of playing around for about a year, but recently found out about you guys through Elon Trades. And thank you to Elon. Just saw that you were on this call. And I just wanted to ask a question. My husband and I, we run a 501c3 non-for-profit meditation, yoga sort of outreach program and work with our communities here just in providing ways to help people reduce stress and, you know, not crumble under all of the pressures of life. And I was really interested in SandClock. Like, I dabbled a bit in Bitcoin and Ethereum and a few lower cap things, but this is the first project that really caught my attention because of the basically everything about it sounds like something I could really use myself long term as far as like a banking institution. And I just wanted to find out a little bit about how does it work, like if somebody wanted to donate to our charity or if we want to donate to somebody else's charity, like, is it possible to get like smaller charities? Like, we're really, really tiny. We don't need a lot of money for what we do. We just, you know, are rebuilding our website and stuff like that. But is there like an opportunity in a grassroots way to for our 501c3 to get involved with your project?
Yeah. So first of all, just from what I heard briefly about what you and your husband are doing, I love that. Cristiano and I love yoga. For those of you who don't know, we do a lot of yoga. Cool. And so I love that. And yeah, we can definitely, you can definitely take advantage of SandClock. It's quite simple. You would just have to apply with us and we'd help you get onboarded. And then you would have access to, you know, anyone who wants to make donations through SandClock to your organization. It's pretty easy and we can definitely help you with that if you want to message me or Cristiano or one of us afterward as well. Feel free to do that on here or on Discord, wherever you prefer. And we can definitely help you with that. And like I said, it's yes, 100%. Anyone can get onboarded, any organization, and take advantage of SandClock and yeah, what offers.
And I think it's worth mentioning that you don't necessarily need our approval.
Mm-hmm.
The being onboarded by us just means that we'll help you set up your wallet and we'll actually add the organization and the description of the organization to the front end.
To our database.
But it is, anyone can route yield to a third party wallet. So mm-hmm. if you have a wallet, people can donate their yield to you. I guess one of the differences would be that you wouldn't be able to, you as in the user redirecting the yield to you, wouldn't be able to receive a tax receipt, a chargeable tax receipt. Whereas if they do it through our front end, we can support that. But it is permissionless in that regard, that anyone can just specify which address to send yield to, and then that address can just sign in, quote unquote sign in, and claim that yield.
Cool. I wish you guys a lot of success with what you're doing, and I'm happy to be a tiny part of it. And I'm a big talker about quartz, and all my friends know about quartz, and we have That's a little
spread the gospel.
We had a little dinner the other night, and we're all in on quartz, so we were just happy we were supporting each other, and happy for each other that we've all made quite a bit so far, and looking on holding what I have and keep adding to it. So thanks very much.
Thank you, AnaCrypto108. And this is why I love this community. Like, I really, honestly, in the last couple of weeks and months, I just have grown to really love this community and the people in it, and really see you all as individuals who are part of this. So thank you very much for that. Crypto Bandits, I'm going to give you permission to speak. All right, Crypto Bandits, you're on. Just connecting now. Hello.
Hi. About the previous answer that you gave about the banking system and the interest loans and the small amount of money that they give on your interest or your money. And I wanted to find out, is it because you have so much middlemen that the interest on your money is lower within a banking system, where you will actually get more because it's more decentralized?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at any bank, really, if you look up the number of people that they employ, they could have, let's say, $1 billion worth of deposits, but and they're employing literally like 10,000 people to manage that money. It's simply impossible to sustain a high yield on those deposits when you have to pay so many people to manage the money. So I suppose it stems from not only the number of middlemen each taking a cut, but also the lack of automation, and it's just a very bloated, inefficient system.
Okay, because then you're like, for me that started is, I'm kind of like picturing no middlemen but more interest, you know. It's that kind of picture where you are a bank but you're decentralized in a way. Is that the concept, or is it still going to be, as you said before, because you've got to follow a lot of rules and regulations?
No.
Be more centralized, so, afterwards.
Yeah, the regulations apply only to the front end. Our contracts are, they're contracts, they're on chain, they're immutable. The law only applies to the front end that we operate, and the goal is to eventually not have to operate the front end, to offload that risk to our community, our partners, and so on. But yeah, it does not apply to our contracts, only to what we allow on our front end, and anyone can operate the front end. A front end only exposes the capabilities of the contract, so it's not going to be encumbered by that.
Okay, so
and Cristiano, just to add just a bit of a clarity, that we are earlier when we had the conversation around yield generation, we talked about it in the broader money market sense and the DeFi. So within our ecosystem, or within SandClock's ecosystem right now, we are in the business of pursuing yield. So meaning we tap into other money markets, and so we are not generating the yield ourselves.
I see. Okay. And
back to you, Christian.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense, because then that means because you're not generating it yourself, it's kind of like community driven. So the more community put in, it's the higher the yield. Is that right? Because you have less, no middlemen.
No, I mean, for us, it's we take the liquidity and mobilize it onto other money markets to generate the yield. I mean, there's a huge difference between doing it ourselves and also versus pursuing it. And also, no, there's no correlation between like the number of users or the community and the higher yield or lower yield. Right, okay. Now, it's based on what the other money markets and the DeFi ecosystem generates. Mm-hmm. For you as a user, you don't have to worry about, you know, this was a conversation we had earlier, which is like, you don't have to worry about mobilizing your funds from, you know, one pool to the other pool to optimize your return. All of that happens through our smart contracts, where you don't have to worry about how those funds are mobilized to generate the yield.
Okay.
But the actual borrowing and lending does not happen within SendClock.
There are definitely some good resources out there on kind of why interest rates and yield generation is so high and so successful in crypto. And I definitely recommend you kind of look into that, because it's interesting. It's a bit complex, but it's interesting. And
So
no, thank you so much for your question. I think I'm gonna have,
thank you.
I saw Dex Punk. You keep coming in and out on the requests, but if you request next, I'll put you up. And then in the meantime, yeah, Dex Punk, I'm gonna give you permission. Okay, Dex Punk, you're up.
Hi, are you listening to me?
Yes, we can hear you, Dex Punk. Hello.
Hello. First of all, nice to meet you in voice. I'm in the project since the beginning of it, since phase one. I'm very excited and want to thank you guys for doing this project and this platform. It's very beautiful to see how the team works and what you want to achieve on this. So thanks for that, and thanks for giving us the opportunity to be a little part of it. And my question is, I know that it's a very, you are very product focused on marketing side, and I love it. Like, if the product is good, people will come. And I just want to know, and when the product launches, if there are going to be any incentives to make the adoption of the vaults or some sort of marketing? And this is the first question. And as the main goal is to get this liquidity to generate yield and generate wealth, if there is any plan to own some of this liquidity and generate its own yield to donate it to charities also. And third question is, I'm very, very curious about the third project and if you guys could give us a hint about it.
Yes. So can you repeat the first question? So the...
How we'll get others.
So the first question, we will use... So I guess the incentive is the yield itself.
Yeah.
On Ethereum, it's decent. On Terra, it's quite high because it uses delta neutral strategies. It uses almost delta neutral strategies, and also a pure liquidity provision strategy. So these are all strategies that do not exist right now anywhere. Mm-hmm. They're just not feasible on most chains. They rely on other products, but we created them. I suppose a similar strategy would be by Lemma Finance on Ethereum, but on Terra, nothing like this exists, and ours is a lot more complex as it looks through a bunch of different assets and selects them for the user. So another good use case for for automation. In terms of the marketing aspect, will we incentivize deposits? Yes, we definitely will. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're collaborating with UMA to create KPI options. And so the higher TVL, the more quotes your KPI option will be able to unlock.
Yeah, and we also are very keen on other projects using our vaults and SandClock in a way operating in the background, if you will. So
DAO tools.
Yeah,
that's
like
a good example of that.
So we're okay with being a project. I mean, of course, the goal is to get people onto our own platform, but we're also okay with kind of working in the background and having other projects use our vaults and, you know, not necessarily having, you know, their name is not SandClock, their name is their own project, and that's fine. And we have a couple of examples of this thus far of some projects that will use our vaults. For example, Angel Protocol will use our vaults and some others, and that's something that we'll continue pursuing and working on those partnerships. And, you know, those tend to take a long time. I think that is one of the few things in crypto that don't move super fast. Oftentimes partnerships, even partnerships that we've announced, are ones that we worked on for like months and months. So because, you know, of course, projects want to work with people that they trust and that they feel they know well. And so it takes time to develop that trust between both parties. But it's definitely something that we're talking about and we're pursuing in 2022. What was your other question, DexPunk?
Second question was, if is there any plans to like kind of start generating the SandClock's own liquidity to participants in vaults, and does donating part of its yield also like starting
yeah.
to
yeah. That is actually part of the tokenomics. So all the fees that accrue to the treasury are deposited in the vault, and this yield generated is given to depositors. And initially, it's everyone will benefit from this. Everyone who deposits will benefit from this, and this will enable us to grow faster. And once our treasury has amassed a lot of, protocol on liquidity, that's when we'll essentially turn on the quotes button, value accrual button, and the yield generated by the treasury will only go to quartz stakers. So it will be similar to, and you know, this is the idea, but we can implement it in a more complex way, similar to Curve, whereby you have to lock your quartz for 4 years to get a boost of, let's say, 50%. If you lock it for 2 years, you only get 20%, and so on and so forth. So that is definitely we've definitely thought about that already, and it's part of the tokenomics, probably part of some Medium article, but worry not, once we launch you will have access to all the internal documents. They will outline everything in a very centralized source of information.
Nice.
And
I'm very
as for
excited.
Number three,
I'm sorry about doing all the questions at once, but third one is just I'm very excited about Aura and SandClock.
Oh, the hint.
And the symbiosis of it. And of course, since I'm onboarding since the beginning, I'm very curious. I know if you can't, you can't. But if you could give a hint for us, would be.
Yeah, so the hint is very simple. It's just yield generation, but extremely dynamic. And it's definitely something that the space needs. The space does not know it needs it yet, but once we publish the white paper and deploy it, it's everything will make sense, and SandClock will benefit tremendously from it, not only because it's a much better way to generate yield, but also because we can deploy Aura on any chain that we want, any L2, and this will also allow us to deploy SandClock there and thus expand our reach, expand our value accrual, lower gas fees for everyone, which is definitely a priority for us because it's stuff just got ridiculous this year. Ethereum went up 10 times. Yeah. And the fees were high before, but now they're just brutal.
Yeah, sometimes it was brutal.
So that's the hint.
That's okay. Thank you very much. Nice to meet you guys by voice. I only talk a little bit with you in Discord and on that. But nice to meet you guys. And thank you for all the work. And we are together.
Yes. Thank you so much, Dex Punk. It was really nice speaking with you. All right. Now I'm going to put up 0xTark. Hopefully you have not forgotten your question. And you're just connecting now. All right. 0xTark, you're muted. But if you want to speak, feel free. Or if you want to, ask a question or comment.
Thank you guys for hosting this. What is when, Delta Neutral starts yielding less and maybe, Anchor yields less in some kind of disaster scenario? Like, where would SandClock yield come from? Or what would happen to the vaults if the initial source of yield starts to go down dramatically?
Yeah, that's a good question. And nice profile pick. Terry Fan here. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
So disaster case, that is precisely why we want to build Aura. And I'm working on the white paper so that we don't have to rely on so many third parties. But if disaster were to strike, what would we do? So if it's just Mirror Protocol, then the vault is capable of rebalancing to Anchor Protocol. If it's a UST problem, then I'm not sure exactly, because if it's a UST problem, I think that's going to drag down the other stables, at least for some time. And it's less bad when it comes to USDC and USDT, because supposedly they can be redeemed one-to-one through traditional rails, payment rails. But other partially algorithmic stablecoins like DAI would suffer. But if it's just a problem of Anchor cannot generate yield for some reason, or Mirror, then if it's not generating yield, then you probably shouldn't have your money there, because it's the opportunity cost has a value as well. But as more protocols deploy on Terra, we will also tune our algorithm to include these protocols, and we'll update our contracts to support these new protocols. Like, for instance, Mars Protocol, not only will it enable us to generate more yield, because if we have a Delta Neutral strategy with M assets, one side of the equation, the long, is just going to be sitting there doing nothing. With Mars Protocol, you can deposit your M assets that are just sitting there, and now they're also generating yield, which compounds.
But if your UST is not generating any yields on Mira or Anchor, there are other ways to generate yields. You will have options. And so we can have kind of like ribbon protocol strategies that are like you buy puts, stuff like that. Or if the money market, if Mars is generating more yield than the option strategies, then we can do that. We can use options to create delta neutral strategies as well. There are many ways that use like the funding rate of perps to generate yield. So I don't think it will ever be a problem. I mean, I also don't think that it's realistic to expect yields to be extremely high, let's say 2 or 3 years down the line. But we'll adapt when the time comes. And we also have a third project in the pipeline that is still way, like there are still, I don't know, it's probably like a year away because the underlying infrastructure does not exist yet to support such a project. So, but it's quite a simple project actually. So we're still conducting research on that, but hopefully this third project combined with Aura will be the answer to all of your questions and problems. And ours too, because we don't, I personally don't think that this modern monetary theory economy will last the way things are going.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I agree. And I think using options as well will be super interesting, especially with protocols like DOPEX, where they're, you can put on delta neutral trades very soon, but also have insurance with like insurance put vaults that are specifically for protocols like SandClock and others. So yeah, it's exciting. Thank you. And looking forward to Aura and this other secret project. Now I'm curious about that too.
Thank you. That was a really good question.
Yeah, great question. All right, awesome. So you guys all have really good questions. I'm really happy actually about that. So David Alejandro, I'm going to put you up here now. All right, you're connecting and then you have the floor. All right, go ahead. Hello. You're muted, David Alejandro, but you're a speaker, but you're muted. If you're speaking, we can't hear you. David Alejandro, you're muted. I don't know if you're trying to speak. All right, I'm going to put up, I don't know how to say your name, Fashandito, 123. I'm going to put you up there. And all right, you are connecting and then you can speak.
Okay, I'm not sure if it's my turn. Or...
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay, hello. Thanks. Well, sorry if this has already been addressed. I joined a little bit later, but I was wondering, I'm really fan of Luna's blockchain, and I'm really interested in SandClock as well, but unfortunately I can't afford Ethereum fees to buy some SandClock tokens. So I was wondering if you have a plan of bridging some tokens to Terra or some other blockchain. I'm not going to ask to listing on centralized exchanges because I know that's more difficult and it usually to produce a little a bump on the price too, but I'm really interested in being able to buy some tokens from the Terra blockchain.
We actually are getting listed on a centralized exchange pretty soon, right around launch. Like I mentioned this earlier, the only reason that we aren't saying which one is for legal reasons so that we don't get in trouble for like insider trading stuff. But we are going to be listed on a centralized exchange right around launch time. So that should, and it's a good one. So that should make it a little bit ease the costs a little bit.
Okay, thanks. And do you have any plans at this point of bridging to other blockchains, or it's not something that you are aiming to do in the near future?
Yeah, it's both. It's both. So we do have plans, but not in the near future. And by near, I mean the next 3 months. But after that, yes, we probably will.
Okay, thank you.
Cool. All right, thank you. And I think we'll do one more.
And by probably, I mean we definitely will.
Okay. We'll do one more from Alpha Node. So I'm going to give you permission, and you'll be our last speaker on here tonight. Oh. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I was wondering, what is some things to look forward to coming into next year?
Something with regards to Sandclock?
Anything you feel of importance that would, you know, like assure us as investors?
Yeah. So I'm sure Christiana will have a response as well. But I think the biggest thing is launch. But even at the start of January, we will open source our code on January 6th as we start our third and final audit. So that's, I think people get excited about that, even people who don't necessarily Woo! Read code, just to know that there is code. And I mentioned it very briefly, not on this call, but in other contexts. The only reason we haven't done it thus far is really honestly genuine fear of just being front run, because we got burned kind of early on in that regard, and we became kind of overly protective of our code and what we're building. But January 6th, we're open sourcing it. So like I said, even if you don't read code, you'll at least be able to see it and know that it exists. And then January 25th is the launch. And I think it's going to be awesome. I'm really excited about it. And right around then, we'll also have, like I just mentioned, the centralized exchange listing. So it's just a lot going on. Month of January is going to be huge for Sandclock. And then once we launch, like, I guess, because that's kind of, I imagine, something on people's minds, you know, what happens then after launch? And what happens then? First, we'll ensure that the Terra launch goes smoothly, which will happen about a month after, because like I mentioned, we'll have an audit in between then, one more audit for Terra. And once, you know, our product is fully functioning and launched, and we have our website out as well, which we're trying to free up our front-end developers' hands right now. They're very busy with our UX, but we're trying to free up their hands to implement our website, because it's fully designed. We just need to implement it. But they, once that's done, which is all really exciting stuff, I kind of see as the rest of the year goes on, we'll start to incorporate Aura. We'll definitely go public about what Aura is, imagine in the first half of the year, at least, if not sooner. And we'll start, we'll start really aggressively marketing the product itself, because I think it'll be much easier to do that once we have a product. And pushing the UX and how it works and giving demos and that sort of thing. And that will kind of be the future of Sandclock in the next year, more or less. And of course, you know, I expect things will come up, because they always do in this space. It's just kind of inevitable. I expect more centralized exchange listings in the next year, because several of them who we've spoken to, who are very, very interested, very reputable, great ones, they specifically said wait until launch. So I expect that. And like in general, I just think that things happen really fast in this space. And I also see potentially maybe some events being planned, virtual and or in real life, depends on obviously restrictions and things happening in the world at the time. But I see that happening. That's something that is kind of on our agenda of things we want to do that excite me personally, because it means getting to talk to some of you guys and meet some of you. And that's one of my favorite things to do. And yeah, how about you, Chris? What are you most excited about with regards to 2022?
I'm excited and nervous for the launch, because you should be when you're going to be handling millions of dollars. But I'm excited to get feedback from everyone about the specifically the front end that we've been building, because it's going to be quite new to the space. We're not forking anyone's front end. We didn't take inspiration from crypto front ends. As we actually took inspiration from a couple of Web 2.0 companies that are known for their impeccable UX. So I'm quite excited about that. There's launch. I'm also excited to see where this, I'm excited to decide which L2 we should move Sandclock to eventually.
Metis.
For the Ethereum people. Right now I'm considering Starknet, very, very heavily considering Starknet for many reasons. But I am excited to brainstorm about the best L2, because there are quite a few to pick from. All of them have their pros and cons. It's also nascent technology. It comes with its fair share of problems. But yeah, launching is going to be quite exciting, especially because when we do, we will also launch with Aura. We will not launch there unless we already have Aura. So one implies the other, and that is also very exciting. And there's going to be a very symbiotic relationship between Sandclock and Aura. Sandclock will also benefit, obviously, because for TVL purposes. But like I said, Sandclock and Aura will integrate each other, so to speak, and that is quite exciting. And especially and then once we have the third project, that will be basically my vision, my whole vision for the ecosystem that we are trying to build. And they're all complementary projects that have a lot of synergy between them. And once all three launch, I think that people will have a much easier time attaining financial sovereignty, which is our goal, to do that and to make it extremely accessible for everyone. But actually, because lots of crypto projects say this, that they want finance to be open for everybody. But yeah, it is for everybody if you have the technical know-how, and most people don't have the technical know-how, so it's not actually, there's still a barrier. It's just a different type of barrier.
All right. So thank you, Cristiano. I think we are going to close it here. I think this was really productive.
That was a good question to end
on. I know. Well, that's exactly. I was thinking, wow, what a perfect question to end on. Like, that really sums up everything we talked about today, looking ahead to 2022 for Sandclock and the broader ecosystem. So as you guys all know, I'll do our little plug. Like, we're always on Twitter, and if you ever want to message us or tweet at us, if you liked this, make sure you let us know so that we can do more of these. I think they're fun. I think they're casual and intimate and informative. So like I said, if you like this kind of thing, let us know and we'll do more of these. And also our Discord. We do have Telegram as well, but we don't, just because it was a lot to manage Telegram and Discord, we don't have, our Telegram's not active, but we do have an announcement channel. So if you want to just get announcements and updates, you can get that. And our Discord is super active, and Cristiano and I are really active in it, and as well as our community managers. So if you all ever want to engage in that conversation there, there's always a lot going on in Discord and like I said, Twitter. Yeah, I hope that this was useful to you guys and informative and fun, maybe. And I really like everyone who asked questions, amazing questions, really strong, awesome questions, not at all like, you know, the kinds of questions you see sometimes in other communities. I think these were really valuable, important questions that
kind of got us talking and thinking, and I love that. So yeah, I'm going to end it here. And thank you guys all for being here and listening. And it was really fun to talk to you guys. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody. Okay. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was a space hosted by Sandclock. 2022 with Sandclock. Recorded on Thursday, December 30th, 2021. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. In the darkest of times, when the phoenix arises out of the ashes like some burned up papyrus, open the sarcophagus and release the virus. Got a lump in your throat like tonsillitis. When the flags go up like everyone is righteous, spending government checks, sniffing up the white dust. The previous generation wants to be just like us. Fuck that shit, I'm trying to be like Mike was. Drop the bias and you might survive this. The mummy coming through to remind your highness. I might just buy up my own fucking eyes. Island. Build a little bunker, then wait for the timer. Countdown to zero, day exploiting. Every exploit in your internet sex toys. Intermittent vibrations through the ether. Did you just come? Me either. If you look at the bright side, we're lost at the right time. Blindly following stars in the night sky. Part of me might ride away with the prize fight. Man versus everything else until the time's right. Unleash the Kraken. No wait, that was crack. Fuck, now everybody feeling all amped up. Fucking like bunnies to the national anthem. Ugly little shits eating up all our rhythm. Mishandling the captions, who has the answer? Holding our attention for ransom. Fed up with all the red tape and the boring template. Like it matters if it's a blue or red state. Charged every month and we can't even cancel. Feeling distressed? Fuck it, kill the damsel. Fuck yeah, spread it like we're on some undead shit. And pass the bitch around like a meme from Reddit.
In the beginning it was suggested that the mortality rate would be 5%, and the numbers are so much higher.
We're not ready for the next epidemic.
And so if your oxygen level falls too low and it cannot be kept up with just what we call nasal cannulas or rebreathing oxygen masks, if you can't get enough oxygen from that, then they will intubate the patient.
Terra Spaces.